from the book of Philippians. We're in the fourth chapter. How many of you ever heard of a high-minded person? High-minded. High-minded. That's what Paul is telling these people here, to be high-minded. Think about heavenly thoughts and think about heavenly visions, being heavenly minded. And that's for the first few verses in the fourth chapter of the book of Philippians. He says that. Let's read here in the Amplified Bible, and then we'll go back into the Greek. Therefore, my brethren, whom I love and yearn to see, my delight and my crown, my wreath of victory, thus stand firm in the Lord, my beloved. I beg you and I entreat you and I advise you, Euodia, and I entreat you and advise you, Syntyche, to agree and to work in harmony in the Lord. I exhort you too, my genuine yoke fellow, help those two women to keep on a cooperating level, for they have toiled along with me in the spreading of the good news, the gospel of Jesus Christ, as have also Clement and the rest of my fellow yoke workers whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. Delight and gladden yourselves in Him, and again I say rejoice. By the way, he's quoting Psalm 37, verse 4. Verse number 5, let all men know and perceive and recognize your use unselfishness, your consideration, your considerateness, your forbearing spirit. The Lord is near and He is coming soon. Do not fret and have any anxiety about anything, but in every circumstance, can't do anything about sneezing, it just happens. Don't fret or have any anxiety about anything, but in every circumstance and in everything, by prayer and petition, definite request, with thanksgiving, continue to make your wants known to God. Now, these are the verses we're going to look at for a few moments from the original language. We're studying Greek reading and research by induction. In other words, you're going to learn a little Greek, and you might even learn a little Hebrew in this too, along with some in-depth Bible study. How deep do you want to go, sometimes they say? How deep do you want to go? Well, you can't go much deeper than back to the original language, can you? For in verse 1, Hoste adelphoi mu agapetoi kai epipothetoi kara kai stephanos mu hutos stekete en kurio agapete. The strength in Christian living, the ideals of a Christian mind. The way you train a Christian mind is to think about heavenly things. There are many high-minded people that have lived in the world that look above and they think they're better than everybody else. Mostly lawyers and politicians, by the way. They don't think they're ever going to have to answer to you at all. You're peons, you're slaves, basically, and you will do what they say to do or else. They don't know how to take care of you. High-minded individuals that use others, that think they can outsmart other people and slick them out of money, out of property, or whatever. And they're out there all over. We're not talking about that kind of high-mindedness. We're talking about thinking about heavenly thoughts. I think back in times about Jacob. We call Abraham the father of the faithful, don't we? And we have to call him the father of faith. But yet Abraham had many, many, many faults just like us. I look back so many times at Jacob. And I look at Jacob, and I see a man that was forced into a lot of situations that he didn't want to be in. Jacob was a person that was a very large man, a very tall man, a very powerful man. He had a brother that was a scoundrel, Esau. Esau was nothing but a playboy and running around, chasing around all the time, either hunting or playing of some sort. He was a playboy. Jacob did all the work. He fought off the bear, the lions, and the tigers, or whatever was out there among the cattle. By the way, there was cattle. Jacob had camels. Jacob had sheep. He had goats. Maybe even elephants, they say. Large animals. And he protected all of them with his life. He came, his brother sold him his birthright because he didn't care anything about it. His father tried to cheat him out of the birthright that he had bought, by the way, for the least valuable items in the land of Palestine. His mother had to intercede. And she tricked the old man because he was blind. He wasn't blind for no reason. God blinded that man. So he could not bless the wrong man. God interceded. That woman, God used that woman. Rebecca was used of God. He had to take off and go to the land of Haran and go up there with a cheat and a liar and a thief, Laban. And dealt up there for over 20 years, being cheated and lied to. He bargained for a wife, Rachel, and he was tricked, and he gave him Leah, and slipped her into his tent instead of Rachel, whom he loved. Jacob wanted one wife. He ended up with four wives. Three of them he didn't really want. But God used them anyway, in every way. We have the 12 sons of Jacob, and of course even Dinah. Can't leave Dinah out. They started the Canaanite wars over her. Jacob was high-minded. He always thought about God and about God's blessing. Esau couldn't care less about it. Jacob said, "Well, you sell me birthright." He said, "So what? What I need it for?" All he wanted was the glory that went along with it. He didn't want the responsibility. Be high-minded is what he says here in these verses. "So as brothers of me, beloved brothers, and epipothetoi." By the way, this epipothetoi, that is only used one time in the New Testament. This is it. "Those that I desire and long after, and I lust after." It's a little verbal adjective here, but it means to greatly desire. Have you ever known anybody in your life that you just, when you, the last time you saw them and the first time you saw them again, you were just delighted, your heart just leaped? Your heart just leaped? That's what Paul says about these people. "You're my heart's desire." A joy, gladness, happiness, and a crown, and my crown, my Stephanos. The word crown there, that means a ribbon, a band that is a crown or symbol of authority, and symbol of greatness. They gave Stephanos to people that won the Olympic Games. They may have been fragile and fading away, but they were real crowns of glory. When Alexander the Great conquered all the known world, from his crown was streamer Stephanos coming, little wreaths coming down around, typifying every land that he conquered. And not only did he conquer them, he made them allies. My crown. Just in the same manner, hutos there, a little adverb. And then ye stand fast in the Lord, beloved in the beloved Lord. Now this word stand fast here means stake yourself out. Stand fast. In the American Indian culture, one brave man among the tribe, but they had a discrepancy between two tribes. If one man was brave enough in the tribe and a great warrior and a great leader, he would ride in on a white horse into the enemy tribe, an enemy village. And he would get off of that with a long leather thong and a hammer or a mallet and drive a stake in the ground. And he said, "Here I am. All of you brave men here, let's settle your arguments with me and you. Settle the arguments between me and you, nobody else." I wonder how many wars we'd have in the Western culture if the leader had to go out there and take the bullets. I wonder how many wars or battles would be fought if the leaders had to stand in the front. It tried to make quite a difference, wouldn't it? When their lives are in jeopardy. We've got a situation over there in the Middle East right now where thousands of people their lives are being jeopardized because of foolish decisions. Terrible decisions. If they had to go stick their neck in the noose over there or underneath the blade of one of those Muslim swords, they might make a little difference. We have a few leaders in America that went over there and fought. And they know what it's like to be over there in an unfriendly land. I've been all over that Middle East over there. I'm telling you what, it's a scary place to be. When I went over there in 1975 and 76, the name America meant something. Being an American citizen meant something. You had rights. Seems like today we don't have that. Stand fast. Go out there in the front. In the battle zone, and stand up and fight, or speak, or defend Jesus. Now the word Stephanos there, we have some English names come out of that. Stephanos, what name would you get out of that?
Stephen.
Stephen, what else? How about a girl's name?
Stephanie.
Stephanie. All right, Stephanie. Comes from this word. That means a prince, a crown, a victor. Stand fast in the Lord, in our beloved Lord, and beloved in the Lord. Verse number 2 now. Yodion parakalo kai sintikain parakalo to auto phronein and kirio. Thank high thoughts, girls. Girls, think high thoughts. That's what he says here. Yodion. Yodion means good traveling, good roads. It comes from you, good. And hodos, that means road. Yodion. I beseech. I beg you. I parakalo. That means I walk alongside and I put my arm around you and I talk sweetly in your ear and with comfort and love and with instruction. And Syntyche, the word means accident. hazardless. My daughter-in-law wanted me to give her an Indian name. I gave everybody else the Indian name. I hadn't given her one yet because I had to see who she was. Well, she kept falling down all the time. Fell to the top of a coffee table one time and fell here and fell there, broke her leg and broke her ankle or whatever, just falling all over the place. And she asked me, "What's my Indian name?" I said, "One who falls down a lot." Now, I don't know why they give this girl here a name like Accident or One Who Falls Down a Lot. Maybe she fell down a lot. Parakalo, I beseech you. And it's first person singular, present, indicative, I continually do this. And the same thing to think, phronein. Now the word phronein there, it means to live in harmony, to think alike. Phrein is the word it comes from. You know, there's several words for mind in Greek. There's at least five and a little bit more, even. The word phrein means logical. Frame means logical. It means to think logical thoughts. To think in harmony. To have the same goals. To have the same likes and dislikes. Learn to live together. Learn to live together. That's a hard thing to do, isn't it? Marilyn, you figured that out, huh? You were a little rough on me to begin with, weren't you? And I mean, it was real... a little rough. But you have to get used to each other, don't you? And get used to each other, the way they eat, the way they think. All of this. Their eating habits, their sleeping habits, their resting habits, their working habits. All of this is very important in it. She wanted me to eat like her and drink like her and sleep like her. And like all the same things that she liked. Now, that's nice if that can happen, but it just doesn't happen in the beginning, does it? This is a funny thing. We went out to dinner or whatever, or even at home. I'd get up in the morning and go in there, and sometimes she'd have breakfast fixed if I had time to eat breakfast because I was working on that farm all the time. I'd go in there at breakfast, she'd have a cup of coffee sitting down there. And when I get to eat breakfast, she said, "You didn't drink your coffee." I said, "I don't drink coffee." "What do you mean a cowboy that doesn't drink coffee?" I said, "I don't drink coffee." So we'd go out to a restaurant and she'd order coffee for me. And it would sit there and I'd look at it. I wasn't going to drink it. I didn't want it. It wasn't really good for my heart because I had arrhythmia. But she wasn't thinking about that at all. She wanted me to drink coffee like she did. Drinking coffee to her was something very important, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And she didn't understand why I wouldn't drink coffee with her. One thing, I couldn't drink coffee with her because it bothered me and I didn't like it, number two. Well, about 2 years of that going on. And finally, she gave up. Most of the time. I beseech you to think the same way. In the Lord. To be heavenly minded. To let all your worldly cares and wants, just lay them aside a little bit. And if it's for the harmony of the fellowship of this church, the worldly things are secondary. The godly things, the spiritual things, the heavenly things, the high-minded things, the spiritual things are more important. Four in verse number three now. Preaching the true gospel to the world is always a problem. Preaching the true gospel to the world is always a problem. Nay, eroto kai si nese sigege sise, that is, sisege silabano autois Aetanes, anto, euanglio, sin el theison. Moi meta kai clementos, kai ton loipon, sinergon, mu hon ta onomate in biblo zoes. I always have a little trouble with my throat. We need your prayers. We were poisoned. We had 60 to 75 gallons of propane go off in the house. And Marilyn's sniffling from it, and I'm coughing from it. And this was a week ago. We're trying to clean all of our laundry and get everything washed to try to get all that poison out. So please excuse my coughing and sneezing and all of that. Yes, I ask, Eroto, I request, I'm requesting of you also, genuine yoke fellow. Genuine yoke fellow. Now, there is a somewhat of a controversy over these two little words there. Genese, sige, sizige, sizige, sizige. Now, there are a group of people that believe that Lydia was Paul's wife. Now, he could have had Lydia for what? There's no problem with that. Paul said he wanted to be single so he could carry on the gospel. He said he had a right to have a wife like Peter and John and all the rest of them. He had a right to have a wife. Now, Paul had been divorced and he had a right to marry again. His wife left him and divorced him, and that was it. And so he said, but he said, I'm going to live my life dedicated to God. And some of the Catholic ideas come from this, that he was, celibacy is the most spiritual thing you can do. Celibacy is not the most spiritual thing you can do. Paul the Apostle traveled here to there and to and fro and all over. One of the reasons why they say that Lydia was his wife is because Lydia took Paul in her home and took care of him for a long period of time. And that wouldn't look good unless they were married. That's hearsay, whatever you want to call it. Now, the original language kind of takes care of a lot of our ideas, doesn't it? Now, how would original language take care of this problem of people thinking that Paul and Lydia were husband and wife? How would it take care of this problem? Can it do that? Can it take care of the problem? Nay, erota kai si genese si zige. This is how it takes care of the problem. Genuine, that's a description, but it's vocative singular masculine. Oh-ho, it's masculine. So this genuine person is masculine. And this word, sizige, that's masculine. That's vocative singular masculine. So this isn't Lydia at all, is it? So you can take your English Bible and think whatever you want to, but if you're going to go to the original language, you're going to say, this is a guy. His yoke fellow is a guy, not a woman. And he's not a homosexual either. Paul looked down upon that terribly. He called the homosexual dog. He said, my fellow yoke worker, and it has here a second person's present imperative middle voice. To help for yourself, receive together them. He's talking to some other guy there, and he's telling the other guy to receive them together, to get them together. Help them to make up and to love one another. Sometimes that's hard to do, isn't it? I've seen men in church fight like cats and dogs. And I've seen women in church fight like cats and dogs, jealous of one another, wanting their way always and constantly causing friction. Friction, friction, friction. And that's what was going on in this church here in Philippi. Remember, this was a very important place. This was the axle of the whole Middle East here, Philippi was. This would be the most important church to be established here. Paul established this church could reach the east and the west. This is the first Gentile church founded in Europe. To help them, for yourself, do this because you want to. Who in the gospel, they struggled. They have struggled with me. And both Clement, now the word Clement, Clementos, or Clementia. That word means merciful. It means helpful. It means gracious. Both Clement and the ones remaining, fellow workers, synergon, those that work together, fellow workers, and those that remain together of me, of whom the names in the book of life. Names are written in the book of life. By the way, this is the only place outside of John's writing that the name book of life is used in the Bible. All the saved names are written in the book of life. Before God ever created the heavens and the earth, God wrote the names of those that would be saved in the book of life. That's real foreknowledge, people. Revelation 13, 8 and 20 and verse 15 are cross-references to this. Now let's look at verse number 4. Kyrete in Kyrio, Pontote, Pauline ero Kyrete. Rejoice in the Lord. Think high in the Lord. Think heavenly things in the Lord. Rejoice in the Lord always. That word pontote there, that is an adverb. And in the analytical lexicon on page 300, you can look at that. And by the way, I have edited one of the original analytical lexicons and put things that didn't have in there and cross-referenced it into Hebrew and etc., etc., etc. I had a copy of that. I hope to get that done in PDF form so you can have that all over the world one of these days, maybe, I hope. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Be high-minded. Be heavenly-minded. Verse number 5, and that's where we're going to end tonight. To epikes himon nos teto pasin anthropois ho kyrios egis. Ho kyrios egis. The modesty, the forbearance, the meekness, active modesty, actually, is this word here. In James 3:17 and 1 Timothy 3:3, it uses this term. Epikeis. It's Latin modestes. 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 It means to dress modestly, to think modestly, to talk modestly. It means to talk with forbearance, to talk with patience, to act with patience, to think with patience. That the forbearance, the patience, the modesty of you, let it be known to all mankind. To all mankind. Let your habits be known to all mankind. And then he says one little phrase here. Ho Kyrios Angus. Ho Kyrios Angus. Now, the Lord is near. He's always near, isn't he? He's always at hand. He's always at our sides. Always, isn't he? Now, the word Angus there, it's epsilon, gamma, gamma, epsilon, sigma. And it should say, if you just pronounce it the way it looks, It would be E-G-G-U-S, or Y-S, E-G-G-Y-S. But when you got two gammas in a row, two G's in Greek, the first G becomes an N. Let me give you an example of this besides this here. If I can find my writing tool here. Angus, Angus, Angus. That's the way you should say it. Now, let's show you another one. Angelos. Do you see how the two G's or gammas become, the first one becomes an N sound? And by the way, the Ypsilon is not an Upsilon, it's not a U, it is a Y sound. Y sound. Many of the Greek background, the German background Greek grammars will have that as Ypsilon, that as Upsilon. But it's not. Let the forbearance of modesty, the active modest lifestyle, be known to all mankind. The Lord is near. He's at hand. The Lord is beside you always, isn't He? Does the Lord walk with you through the valley of the shadow of death? I have been through many, many near-death situations. Since Marilyn and I have been together, I've been through it. Being around me is dangerous, isn't it? Huh? I've been through a lot of near-danger situations. I drove back and forth to school for about 12 years from east of Bakersfield, California to Bellflower, California, east of Bakersfield toward Edison, and all the way down. I drove back and forth through all the foggy, through all the rain, the snow, the sleet, and the hail, and everything else. And I went down there, and for most of my life, I've either had a CB or a ham radio. And it is really very helpful to have a CB radio with you traveling. I remember one time I was coming from Los Angeles area, and I was going down. We were coming into the Lubeck area, which was really foggy. And a truck driver was saying, slow down, everybody, slow down, beware, beware, beware. There's a wreck, there's cars all over, people's bodies laying all over. I slowed down, and I went out into the Meridian, and I picked my way through all of that, and went through all of it, and on down. God was with me. I've been through so many, many, many times of that. Here the other day when the house was full of propane, this house should have blown up. I don't understand why the house didn't blow up. There's 60 to 75 gallons of propane in this house, and it was being delivered through a very loose pipe, a fitting that was, it was a compression fitting, and it was loose, and that way it was almost full bore. For 40 hours, propane leaked into this house. I've been very sick with it, with the poison, propane poisoning, but the house should have blown up. Should have died. I'm still trying to recover from that. But God's hand was here. Absolutely. I had a friend visiting here, and he said, God's hand was on this. He said, we should have all blown up. Yeah. How did it not happen? Well, physics would tell you it should have blown up. Physical science, okay? But God's hand was there. Somehow, He did something so the house didn't blow up. Marilyn had her oxygen on, so she kind of didn't succumb to the propane poisoning as much as I did. It wasn't fun. It hasn't been fun still. God's hand, God is always near. He's with you always. Know that He's with you always. Good, bad, and indifferent. He's always there. Our Father, we pray you use this message to honor and glorify yourself. Father, thank you for all the blessings and thank you for always being near. And use this message to encourage hearts all over the world and to let them know that you're always near. Please forgive me.